Habt ihr euch schon mal gefragt, wie es ist, als Fernseh- und Musicaldarsteller zu arbeiten? Darüber und vieles mehr haben wir mit Hollywood-Schauspieler Michael Cerveris gesprochen. Im ersten Teil des Interviews hat er mit Charlotte und Patrick unter anderem von seiner Unilaufbahn, seinem Vorbereitungsprozess und seiner Rolle in der Serie Fringe gesprochen. Wir wünschen euch jetzt viel Spaß mit Teil 2.
Michael, erzähl doch mal, was hältst du von der aktuellen Kinolandschaft und Trends wie dem Barbenheimer-Phänomen?
It's a weird time right now in the commercial entertainment world, and nobody really knows what to do. I mean, the pandemic turned things so upside down and changed our ways of consuming everything. And I think the producers of Barbie and Oppenheimer were very clever and creative on their feet as something started to happen, but I don't think it was a planned, considered thing. I think it came from audiences, and they were just really clever and capitalized on it in a smart way. I did enjoy and appreciate that it made going to the films an event and made it a celebration of the art form on top of everything else. The problem with event level movies is that they're only for these massive budget films, and those films eat up so much space in the consciousness that sometimes smaller films get squeezed out because everybody's only talking about Barbieheimer, and a lot of other terrific films are being released that aren't getting any attention because they're not part of that. But if it does kind of encourage people to get back into movie theaters, then, you know, that's a great thing.
Publikum ins Kino zu locken, um Filme zu sehen, die nicht auf dem Level von Barbenheimer sind, war also sowieso schon schwierig. 2023 kam noch ein weiterer Faktor hinzu. Der Streik der Schauspielgewerkschaft SAG-AFTRA ließ Hollywood monatelang stillstehen. Wie steht Michael zum Ausgang des Streiks?
I have to say, I was ultimately disappointed in the contract that we ended up with. Very difficult for so many people, not just actors and writers, but all of the other people and craftspeople and locations people and catering people who, you know, everybody affected by those industries. I think progress was made, but I think there was a lot more progress to be made. And the people actually making the things really are just scrambling. You would be surprised how many actors who you see on things and think, oh, well, they must be doing great. You know, they're doing a second job at the same time, or they make good money for the time that they're doing that, but then it may be 6-8 months before their next job and they have to live in the meantime too.
Wo er vor allem Bedenken hat, ist beim Thema künstliche Intelligenz.
And I have to say, I wasn't really amazed with the AI concessions either. I mean, I feel like this idea that they now need to sort of tell you what they plan to use your image for, and it needs to be kind of more defined, whereas in the past they could just sort of say, we have your image, we'll do whatever we want to with it for all eternity and there's nothing you can do about it. It still depends largely on them honoring that and without a lot of transparency, so how will I necessarily know, you know, what's being done with it? You'll be offered a contract that says, we will have the right to use your image to do these things. If you don't want to agree to that, you now have the option of, you know, saying no to that. But that also probably means they'll say, oh, okay, well, then we'll hire somebody else. So it's not really a protection. It's another hurdle that you're going to have to jump and swallow if you want to work. That doesn't feel like an amazing change, really. You know, and those are things that I think still need to change, and I wish we had achieved the things that our leadership was saying at the beginning of the strike they were going to hold out until. And I feel like at some point the producers were going to want to make movies again and make TV shows again, and at some point they would have given in on some of that. Maybe I'm wrong, I wasn't in on the discussions, but those are things that I wish we had achieved and think we still should work towards as we go along. So that would make creativity so much more possible. It would make, you know, a variety of perspectives much more easy to achieve. It's not about pampering artists. It's about just recognizing people's contributions to things.
Neben seinen vielen Auftritten auf der Bühne und im Fernsehen war Michael auch in großen Filmproduktionen tätig. Das gigantischste Projekt war dabei ein Auftritt in einem Film über winzige Supermenschen. In Marvels Ant-Man and the Wasp spielt er den Forscher Elias Starr und verrät uns, dass sein kleiner Auftritt ursprünglich größer sein sollte.
That was amazing and it was so much fun. We did film a lot more that didn't end up being in the movie. We filmed a whole opening sequence that was supposed to be the start of the film, where it was in Buenos Aires, supposed to be in Buenos Aires. It was actually Savannah, Georgia. It's a flashback to 1980. My character is just in a sort of sidewalk cafe having a meeting and gets up to leave and spots the, you know, original Ant-Man and Wasp. Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer are there in their 1980s selves, looking like we remember them. And they chase me through the streets of Buenos Aires, and this whole long, like several minutes chase scene through a marketplace and down this like cobblestone back alley, and then running into, I guess it's what leads up to the big explosion with the quantum machine. But there was a whole like battle sequence. So, you know, they chased me in there. I had a scene with Michael Douglas and confrontation there, and then something happens and the machine gets damaged accidentally by one of the soldiers' bullets or something, and that's what makes it explode. So it was this whole massive long scene that we spent a week or two doing with tons of extras. I thought I had been in large productions before. When I did Gotham, you know, that was a very big design intensive show, and for a television show it was pretty huge scale. And Fringe, you know, we basically shot a movie every week. I mean, it was like very ambitious schedules, but there is nothing like the scale of a Marvel movie, just in terms of the army of people that are involved, and that was pretty cool to be a part of.
Trotz seiner Mini-Rolle hat ihm die Arbeit also Spaß gemacht. Wie läuft das Casting für einen Marvel-Film ab und ist das Studio wirklich so geheimnistuerisch, wie immer behauptet wird? Und noch viel wichtiger, gibt es eine große Zukunft für Michaels kleinen Charakter?
When I got offered the job, they wouldn't even tell me what I was playing. It was so secretive. Once I knew that I was cast, my agents and I were like looking around through Marvel, you know, blogs and stuff. It's like, well, what characters, you know, might I be? And we saw Egghead and thought, oh, I mean, that would make sense. And it turned out that we were right. So that's the thing. And I still, you know, have this hope in the back of my mind, because they do this kind of thing with Marvel where, you know, somebody, but for those who are not familiar, the character that I played in Ant-Man actually survives that gamma blast and becomes this Marvel villain called Egghead later. So I'm still hoping that he's going to come back, if only because I would get to hang out with Paul Rudd, who's one of the nicest, most fun people on the planet.
Seit 40 Jahren ist er bereits auf der Bühne und dem Bildschirm zu sehen. Hat Michael dabei eine Lieblingsrolle? Und gibt es für ihn überhaupt eine eindeutige Antwort?
If you ask me again in a month, I might have a different answer. Tommy meant a great deal to me because it meant getting to sing, you know, the music that I grew up with, and pretending to be a rock star and getting to hang out with Pete Townsend and all of that. Sweeney Todd was really meaningful to me because it was the first Broadway show I'd ever seen, and getting to play it really meant a lot, and working with Stephen Sondheim meant a lot to me. And I loved Fringe, and I loved playing September. I thought he was just such a kind of sweet soul, and a kind of curious, innocent sort of spirit in the midst of all this kind of mysterious, strange stuff. What matters to me most is the experience of creating something with the people that I do it with. That Fringe cast was as goofy and as fun to be around as you would hope they would be.
Nach etwas Grübeln ist sich mit seiner Antwort sicherer. Seine Wahl fällt auf das Broadway-Musical Fun Home, für das Michael einen Tony Award als bester Darsteller gewonnen hat. Es handelt von Alison Bechdel, die beginnt, nicht nur ihre eigene Sexualität in Frage zu stellen, sondern auch die ihres Vaters Bruce, der sich nicht als schwul outet.
Fun Home. I just am so reminded that that production, it was a very complicated story. It was a very difficult thing to figure out how to tell that story, which had been a graphic novel, and to create a stage version of it took a lot of work and a lot of time. But we discovered that it really mattered to people and it really changed lives for people. And it felt like it was part of a moment in this country anyway, where there was this wave of progressive change happening and we were part of that. This show and this experience, I think, is probably always going to be about the most meaningful on every level, creatively, artistically, commercially. It was, you know, successful and won awards and things, but mostly the core of why I ever wanted to be an actor in the first place, which is to, you know, be of service to some greater purpose and to the community. And this show really did that. So playing Bruce was very challenging. He's a very troubled character, and it was hard to do for as long as we did, but it always felt like it really mattered, at least this month. That's my answer.
Zu guter Letzt haben wir uns gefragt, wie Michael es hinkriegt, als Schauspieler erfolgreich zu sein und dabei authentisch zu bleiben. Was ist ihm bei der Rollenwahl wichtig?
I would say that I have tried, for the most part successfully, to only do jobs that I wanted to do for some reason that wasn't simply commercial. I've tried to be smart about how I live so I don't need a ton of money all the time, so that I can pass up opportunities that I would only be doing for the money, because I find the process, even for kind of relatively simple jobs, it's really demanding, I think. And a lot of the roles that I've done, especially on stage, have been very emotionally taxing. And I just don't think I would be very happy if the only reason I was doing something was for money for, you know, a long stretch of time. You know, there has to be something other than a paycheck to get out of bed for. It could be the people you're working with. It could be the places it takes you to. It could be just a chance to see if you can actually do something, or if this will be the thing where you just fail miserably and, you know, learn that lesson. So pretty much everything I've done, whether the end result was a really commercially successful thing seen by millions of people, or, you know, satisfying artistic experience that 50 people saw and closed early, my approach to it is pretty much the same, which is to treat all of it like it's the most important thing I could be doing, because the most precious thing that we have to spend is our time. And so I only want to spend my time doing things that matter to me.
Wie schön, dass Michael Cerveris einen Teil seiner Zeit mit uns verbracht hat. Wir danken ihm für das Interview und die interessanten Einblicke hinter die Kulissen der Entertainment-Industrie.
Vielen Dank auch euch fürs Zuhören und bleibt gespannt auf weitere Interviews mit englischsprachigen Gästen aus der Buch- und Filmwelt.